Cameron Cooper, it's not my turn.
Hey. Good evening and welcome everybody to the Engineering and Operations Committee meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency for November 3rd, 2022. First, let's start off with some announcements. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Summit Circle Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in or internet-based service, the meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by their last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. Members of the public that are here in person, please, if you would like to speak, fill out a comment card that are on the table outside. Procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this item to the board or not. And all committee members are present this evening. And with that, we will go to item one, which is the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand and join.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item two is public comments. Was there any members of the public?
Seeing none.
Seeing none, we'll move on to item three, quarterly safety presentation. And Rebecca is going to present tonight.
Good afternoon. My name is Rebecca Lustig, and I'm the Environmental Health and Safety Supervisor for the agency. And this is going to be the safety update for the first quarter of the 2022-2023 fiscal year, which goes from July 1st to September 30th. So I will pause as Liz gets the PowerPoint up.
There you go, Rebecca.
Okay, thank you so much. Go on to the next slide, please. So our first quarter routine activities and safety. During this quarter, the safety staff engaged in a variety of different safety activities. We did our weekly safety tailgate meetings at different work sites with different work groups. We had our weekly COVID-19 update meetings on Mondays. Staff also did work site inspections each month, checking fire extinguishers, safety kits, eyewash stations, doing general housekeeping, looking at hazardous materials, storage, and that sort of thing. Our safety committee meetings met with the supervisors each month. We also participated in some construction, pre-construction meetings and ongoing construction meetings at the Earl Schmidt Washwater Return Basin, sitting in on those meetings, Valley Center Well meetings, and observing some new tanks being installed at a new development site at Tesoro. We also conducted new hire safety and emergency orientations. And this was to introduce new staff to the safety department, collect information on their safety equipment and PPE and training needs, and to show them the safety manual, to review the injury and illness prevention plan, and show them a safety page on the aquifer in intranet. Also assigning safety courses and vector solutions, and conducting an in-person safety and emergency evacuation training. We also participated in a variety of regulatory compliance activities, which are going to be on the next slide, please. Some of those regulatory activities involved our EPAID numbers. We did the electronic verification questionnaire for all of the agency's EPAID numbers. Staff also accompanied the engineering consultant while they were doing these seismic assessments, which is part of the revalidation for the risk management plan for our ammonia systems. Staff also coordinated with IT and utility staff to get hot work permits incorporated into the field maplet application. The underground diesel fuel tank at Rio Vista had its annual certification and inspection done in August, and secondary containment testing done in September, both of which passed. We had our JPIA risk control grant. The mobile radios were received and were installed. There's just one left over that needs to be installed that's getting done tomorrow. We also helped coordinate with fleet for getting backup cameras installed in some of the larger vehicles and vehicles with trailers to address some of the blind spots that were noticed. And safety also facilitated the annual fire extinguisher service during this quarter. And also not listed here, but another activity that was completed was September 1st, we released the revised COVID worksite safety plan. So this was posted on the safety page in Aquifer, and an email was sent to all staff. The plan was reformatted and revised to align with the state and county COVID guidelines that were revised the previous month in August. Next slide, please. We also coordinated some specialized trainings for staff, and that included doing an injury and illness prevention program class that was focused on supervisor liability, traffic control and flagger training. Different work groups at Rio Vista received their emergency action plan training. We did a training for ICS 300, which is an incident command training, FEMA incident command training course. And it's one of many steps that we're going to be taking to build out our robust emergency management protocol. We also organized a CHP commercial driver training class where we had a CHP officer come to the site and provide some specialized training to our Class A and Class B commercial drivers. He went through pre-drive inspection of a truck, and also was available to answer questions from staff about inspections and rules of the road and that sort of thing. So that was really well received. Next slide, please. So this slide is just a summary of some of our safety meetings and trainings as a leading indicator of safety. So this includes the specialized trainings and tailgates and working groups, pre-construction meetings that I had previously mentioned, including our COVID meetings. Staff completed the monthly safety inspections at the agency sites during this quarter. And so these activities help us evaluate the existing working conditions and identify any safety concerns so we can address them before they become incidents. Next slide, please. This is incident data for this quarter. So in the first quarter, we had 3 recordable incidents. Luckily, none of them were severe enough to be OSHA reportable and not severe enough to warrant any missing days, but they did meet the OSHA definition of recordable. We discussed the root causes of these incidents and did follow-up safety discussions about safe work practices and evaluated PPE with individuals, as well as doing tailored safety tailgate trainings with the working groups. Next slide, please. This is some vehicle safety metrics. We had some vehicle-related training sessions in our first quarter. We had 5 incidents, which involved agency vehicles in some manner during this quarter. One incident was an agency vehicle parked too close to one of our automatic gates, and it resulted in a scratch on the side of the truck. 3 of these incidents involved one of our vehicles either driving, stopped at a light or parked, and a member of the public had hit the vehicle. And the last one was really more of a near miss, but it is an incident where there was a vehicle that was towing a trailer with a ditch witch and the bolt snapped off of that trailer connection while in motion. Luckily, nothing else was hit, but it was recorded as an incident. Next slide, please. Upcoming safety projects for this next quarter and ongoing. We see these are ongoing efforts for best-in-class safety culture at the agency, continuing our weekly tailgate sessions and COVID meetings, continuing with our monthly safety committee meetings with supervisors, as well as open communication and collaboration with all staff and all sections, and also doing our monthly inspections at all sections or at all work sites. We've also been arranging for some demos of additional PPE, such as gloves and face shields. We're continuing to build out and explore more ways to utilize the CLEAR program for tracking projects and regulatory compliance and permit tracking. We are continuing to incorporate the ammonia RMP revisions from the revalidation assessment, and we're working with consultants and our CalARP COOPA inspector to get those done. We are continuing the emergency radio communication installation in systems and at sites. We're continuing our update of the safety manual. We are also involved in ongoing emergency preparedness activities, and that includes doing additional trainings for staff and specialized trainings for an incident management team that would be activated in the event of emergency disaster situation. Some specialized trainings we have planned for this next quarter. October, we did some water tank fall protection and rescue classes. This coming November, we're doing some confined space non-entry rescue. And in December, we're doing qualified rigger and signal person classes for those who operate cranes. Next slide, please. And that concludes the update for this quarter. And I am happy to try and answer any questions that you may have at this time.
Very good. Liz, any questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Very good. Questions from the committee? Okay. Mr. Martin?
Thank you, Chair Cooper. Rebecca, good to see you again. Thank you for your report. I have a question about something you mentioned early on in the presentation about seismic assessments. Can you give us a little more detail about what was involved in that work?
So basically, a seismic assessment is something that's required for each of the sites that has an element in a CalARP program, has a risk management program, and that would be the chlorine sites or the ammonia sites. And so a qualified engineer will come in and they'll do assessments to verify that any of the fixtures, piping around the ammonia tanks or anything having to do with the ammonia system in the event of an earthquake, that they are adequately secure, that they're not going to fall and you know, land on a pipe and cause a release and cause an incident. So we have those reports. I believe that we'd be happy to provide the more detailed reports to you if that's what you're interested in.
Well, I just was curious about what generally it included. How do you know how long it took for that assessment to be made?
Well, the person who did the assessment, they came out and did the site assessment in just the one day. But part of that assessment was also to compile the report, look at drawings, do calculations. So all of that is included in the report. Overall, I believe when it was first contracted, it was before I started working here. So Mike might be able to answer that question a little bit better as far as like the time frame from when it was first planned to do review to do the site visit.
It was over a couple months.
Okay. Thank you, Rebecca.
You're welcome.
Director Orzechowski.
Ms. Lustig, have you had a chance to visit all of our facilities that belong to SCV Water, aside from any properties outside of our outside of the city?
I've been to all of the man sites that have staff there. And I've been to probably a quarter, maybe a third of the more remote sites, but I haven't been to every single site yet.
Understood.
So I've been working a lot of stuff on doing the program development and management stuff. And unfortunately, that doesn't get me out of the office as much as I would like.
It's a lot of work. Any for the sites that you have visited so far, any concerns based on what you've observed in your career so far? Any issues?
Not so much concerns. What I do see is a lot of areas where we as safety could really freshen up some of the sites as far as getting more safety information out there. I've been working on trying to get some safety trainings that are more recorded videos, so it's more accessible to staff, that sort of thing. So nothing really that I would say concerning, but I do see a lot of opportunities where we can really get environmental health and safety at the forefront of people's minds and much more visible at the sites.
Okay. And last question on slide page number 8, you mentioned that you have conducted or you will conduct rigging operations and rigging operations review for the staff. Is this something that's quarterly, annual, semi-annual? How often do we have these trainings?
So I'm not sure the last time that the rigger training occurred, but I do believe that we need to provide that type of training for people who operate the cranes annually. So some sort of a training that goes along with that. So it could be in this case, we're doing an outside contractor coming in and doing a class, but it could also involve online activities or other refresher courses type of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I find that training very important. Based on personal experience in dry dock, even the most experienced riggers and people that assist riggers, there have been many instances where things do fall. So definitely would support more frequent classes or lessons or review sessions. Food for thought.
Oh, absolutely. And we can always look into more of that. And I know that we also have more people who want to get additional training on that. And that's one of the things that I've been bringing up a lot when we're doing the safety tailgates is really getting that message out there that the safety trainings and information that the agency is providing isn't just what we necessarily think people need. I want to hear from staff what their concerns are, what kind of training they would like to receive, particularly people who maybe had come from a different area and say, oh, when I worked over at this place, we did this type of trainer, had this type of equipment, and we really liked it, and let's try it here. And my answer is always going to be great. We will always look into it and see if it's going to be something that's going to be new and useful to the agency.
Excellent. So our staff openly comes to you with suggestions, and you welcome those suggestions. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you. Back to you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Director Ford.
Thank you, Chairman Cooper. Rebecca, you had on one of the slides that there was tests conducted for secondary containment on underground storage tanks. Can you let me know generally what tanks were tested and how did any issues come up at the time?
No, so the secondary containment testing is just for the one underground fuel tank that we have over at the Rio Vista site. And that's a test that's required to be done once every 2 years. And so it's to test these in case there is a leak in the primary containment part of the tank, that the secondary containment is going to hold that in so it doesn't result in an environmental discharge. And there were no problems. In this case, this is something that's conducted by our designated operator that we have contracted with, in the presence of the Coupa inspector that Coupa contracts out to the Public Works Agency in LA. And so the Coupa inspector sent me the report and said, nothing was wrong. Everything passed. We're good for the next 2 years.
I assume there's a sensor in the secondary that's tested as well too.
Sure. Yes. So a sensor in the annular space. Correct.
Okay.
And that was all working.
Thank you. And a great presentation.
Thank you.
And I don't know if it's come to the committee yet, but our engineering department is working on removing the underground storage tank and making it an above ground storage tank. Yeah, I don't know if that's come through yet. I think it's still in design.
It was in the capital budget.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a good idea.
Yeah.
A couple of questions for you, Rebecca. How many radios did we install, do you know?
In total, actually have a number of that. In total, I'm not sure how many have done completely. Let's see. The radios that we installed that were a result of the grant, there was a fixed amount. So not all of the radios that are being installed were from the grant. So as of today, there are 54 vehicles that have been identified as still needing the radios, but then we've also switched some vehicles out. So I'd have to check with Jesus from Fleet Services to see what is the complete and accurate number right now, based on the fact that we've just got more vehicles coming in.
That's all right. I mean,
yeah, I can follow up with that.
Our goal is probably to change them all out. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So the goal is to make sure that all the vehicles have those emergency radios in them. But as with everything right now, there are cost and supply chain issues.
Sure. And the other one was we had three reportable incidents.
Reportable.
Yes. And could you tell us what those were? What kind of injuries they were?
Yeah. So without trying to give too much of the personal information away, the three recordable incidents. One was someone suffered a rolled ankle and had to be on restricted duty for a couple of days. There was one person who had a cut on their index finger, and another person that had a cut above their forehead, both of which had required stitches, and so that required medical treatment that was beyond first aid. So that's what made them have the definition of a recordable incident. However, there were no missed work days, and there was just medical attention beyond first aid, and a couple of them needed to have some restricted duty while they were healing.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? Very good. Thank you. Nice report. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go on to item four. This is to recommend approval to authorize the general manager to execute a contract with GS Sand Canyon for Rent, an LLC, for SCV Water's fair share cost to construct the Sand Canyon Plaza pump station. And with that, we will go to Orlando.
Thank you, Chairman Cooper. Can everyone see my screen and hear me?
We can hear you. We can see
you. Okay, perfect. Thank you, everyone. Good evening, committee members. My name is Orlando Moreno. I'm a senior engineer and project manager here at SCV Water and managing the Sand Canyon Plaza development and pump station project that we'll be presenting today. Liz, when you're ready, I'll go ahead and start my presentation here.
Give me just a second.
Okay, you can go ahead and start the next slide there, please. Perfect. All right, we'll start with an overall view of the deemed pressure zone that's located on the east side of our service area. Today, there's an existing booster pump deficit of 1,707 gallons per minute in the original deemed zone. That zone is shown here in this larger green area. The existing pump deficit was identified in the Santa Clarita Water District Master Plan that was prepared back in 2013. That pumping deficit will increase by 1,470 GPM with the development of the Skyline Ranch and Dean Zone expansion shown here in orange on the left there. And then the proposed Sand Canyon Plaza development shown here in the blue area will further add 520 gallons per minute of deficit to the system. So to address a portion of the existing deficit and to provide additional pumping capacity for that Sand Canyon Plaza development, a new 2,000 gallon per minute pump station is to be constructed within the limits of that development. Should be noted, a separate project will construct a second pump station at Skyline Ranch that will meet that development's pumping demand and also address the remaining Dean Zone pumping deficit. These new pump stations will allow us to consolidate our pumps at two sites and improve our operational efficiency. We'll be removing the existing Soledad pump station shown here at the bottom of the slide in that little red square there. And then we'll have the flexibility of taking the Linda Vista and or Honey House pump stations offline if we desire, which would ultimately reduce operational costs in this Dean Zone. Next slide, please. So if we zoom in, you can see the Sand Canyon Plaza development on the left, and then a blow up of the pump station site on the right. This pump station will be required to be in operation before the developer can occupy or have first building occupancy. The pump station will house two duty pumps and one emergency standby pump, each with a capacity of 1,000 gallons per minute, giving us a total firm capacity of 2,000 GPM at this station. The capacity will cover the 520 GPM generated by the development, and then 1,480 GPM of the existing deficit that exists in that zone. The remaining deficit will be addressed at Skyline, like we mentioned. The new pump station was included as part of the overall Sand Canyon Plaza development entitlements and CEQA document approvals. The City of Santa Clarita approved the final EIR for that development in September of 2017. Next slide, please. So this table here provides a fair share cost breakdown for each of the larger water improvement projects that are required for the development. The project includes offsite and in-track water pipeline work for which the cost will be fully funded by the developer. A new 1.7 million gallon tank and site improvements will be constructed at the existing Dean Tank site, which the developer will be responsible to pay for approximately 38% of that cost. And then for this project, the Sand Canyon Plaza pump station, the developer will be responsible to cover 26% of the construction and construction support cost, with the agency funding the remaining 74%. So the developer's fair share percentage was basically calculated by taking the 520 GPM that their development's going to generate and dividing that by the 2,000 GPM that our pump station will be providing. So 520 divided by 2,000 GPM gives us 26%. Next slide, please. The developer will be performing and supervising the construction of the pump station, and they will be responsible for bidding, selecting, and hiring the contractor. This arrangement allows the pump station to be completed much faster. It reduces agency staff resources, and then also reduces overall project costs to the agency. The agency will be entering into an agreement with the developer. In that agreement, the agency will reimburse the developer for costs incurred, but not to exceed our fair share percentage. The developer will grant the pump station land to the agency in fee at no cost. They will also be providing a certified graded site, pad, retaining walls, electrical meter, and erosion control at their own cost. They will be managing the contractor through completion, and then construction quality assurance and control testing will be handled as well by the contractor for the project. On the flip side, the agency will be managing the construction inspection and engineering construction support services portion of the work. A developer will be giving us a deposit payment to cover their fair share cost of these services before we start construction. I should also note that the developer will still be responsible for all their required facility capacity fees in full as part of this development project. Next slide, please. Okay, so the developer sent construction documents to seven potential bidders. Five of these bidders declined to bid on this one. A bid was received from Pacific Hydrotech and Cali Agua. One thing I'd like to point out tonight is that there was an error in the amount provided in the committee report and on this slide for both Pacific Hydrotech and Cali Agua. Those amounts that you see here include a performance bond premium of approximately $20,000 that should have not been included in these bids. So for the record, the original bid amount for Pacific Hydrotech was $2,662,100. And the original bid amount for Cali Agua was $2,681,455. So I'll make that correction in our committee and our board memos moving forward. The two bids were within $20,000 from each other. They came in approximately 8 to 9% over the engineer's estimate of $2.48 million. After the developer reviewed the bids and after they received our concurrence or the agency concurrence, the developer decided to award the project to Pacific Hydrotech. They're highly qualified and experienced in pump station construction. The contractor has completed several of these pump stations recently in our service area and throughout Southern California. They're actually they're currently building the pump station at the new Tesoro development, which they expect to complete here in the next few months. Next slide, please. The project will also require additional construction, admin, and support costs that will be shared between the agency and the developer. The first is a construction inspection estimated at $268,410, which the agency intends to self-perform with our in-house inspectors. We also have quality assurance and control testing in the amount of $69,030. The developer will be hiring and managing LGC Valley. They're a local engineering outfit that will be conducting specialty inspection. And then we have engineering support services that will be provided by Civil Tech in the amount of $62,350, which the agency will be contracting and managing. Next slide, please. So this slide provides a breakdown of the overall cost and fair share cost allocation between the agency and the developer. The total project cost, including construction and construction support services, will be $3,061,890. Again, there's a little mistake there, so we'll go ahead and make that change in the presentation and our board memos. The developer will be contributing $796,092, and our agency's total contribution will be $2,265,798, which is less than the $2.4 million we have allocated in our fiscal year 22-23 CIP budget for this project. Next slide, please. On schedule, with your recommendation tonight, we're seeking the board's board of directors approval in December's meeting. The pump station is anticipated to start construction in March of next year after the site is graded. And then we expect the pump station will be substantially completed by November, December of next year. Next slide. So to conclude, we are requesting that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorizes the General Manager to execute a contract with GS Sand Canyon for Rent LLC for SCV Water's fair share cost in the not to exceed amount of $2,265,798 to construct the Sand Canyon Plaza Station in the D Zone, including construction quality assurance and control testing, construction inspections, and engineering services during construction. I would also like to request your consideration to place this item on consent if the committee feels it is appropriate to do so. With that, I appreciate your time and I will pass it back to Chairman Cooper. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, Orlando. With that, we'll see if there are any questions from the outside.
On this end, seeing none for virtual.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Noltemeyer.
Yes, I find this very questionable. For one thing, you're using a water master plan that's 9 years ago. A lot has changed in the last 9 years. It's hard to believe you can rely on any of this when it's based on something from 9 years ago. There's so many flaws in this, it's just hard to get it. And I highlighted your costs too. The developer will contribute 26% of the total cost, and SCV Water will contribute 74%. To me, that sounds all in the favor of this developer. Nothing else. I don't know how you could justify this at all. And that's in your own, I have that highlighted. SCB Water will contribute 74% of the total costs. You don't give what they are. We should, if you want to do that, detail one. And then you go into the lack of bids received on this. The whole thing is so questionable. San Fernando Water will contribute almost $1,986,000, and the developer will contribute $697,866. Does that seem fair to you? When the developer is getting all the benefits out of this? It's the kind of thing I constantly see coming from this water company. And it disturbs me immensely. I'm hoping that we can get people onto this board that will make changes in that. This should not be approved. It is too old. You should get current stuff. Current. Not going back all those years and using that kind of information. Everything it comes down to, it's the ratepayers that are going to be, that's where you get your money. It's from the ratepayers. We will be paying them for the majority of this. Why? Who will benefit? That would be anybody that's maybe coming up for election. That's what I see written all over this. Why? When you're using something that is so old, to suddenly be rushing this through. Here I can't.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemar. Hey, questions from the committee?
I don't see the same concerns. I still, you know, I understand you're basing it on the 2013 facilities, but what else is serving this pump station besides Sand Canyon and Skyline? What else is this pump station serving besides Sand Canyon and Skyline that wasn't built into the EIR for them to pay for?
The whole Dean Tank service area. Those stations are going to be abandoned and all put into one pump station. There's three stations now.
Right, but the Skyline isn't built out. The developer isn't paying for all of them to be abandoned.
That's our share. We're abandoning our three, putting it all into one pump station. His share is the 600 and something thousand for his project that he's adding into that and donating the land. And so we get rid of quite a bit of maintenance by getting rid of three pump stations. Questions? President Martin.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. First of all, let me make an observation about the principles of hydraulics haven't changed since 2013. But we do have a new agency-wide master plan, water master plan in the works. Do we not? Hazen is putting that together. And if there are any changes, we'll know about it when they're into their work or complete with their work. So I do trust the 2013 numbers, unless there's something new in hydraulics that has changed our thoughts or demands or fire flow or whatever we're doing this for. So I'm pretty happy with that.
Let's see, what else did I want to ask about? I second on that.
Anyway, I wanted to make that point too about the new work that Hazen Sawyer is putting together. To confirm or supersedes 2013 findings. I don't expect much difference coming out of that, but that will be done, so we'll know. And I can think of my second question, I'll ask it before we do. So thank you, Orlando.
Director Rosofsky.
All right, so we plan to retire Honey House, Linda Vista, and solar the pump stations. What does that entail? Are they still going to be in existence as a backup or completely retire and remove that equipment or reuse it? What's going to happen to those tables?
Yeah, good question, Director. We still haven't decided yet. Right now, we are definitely eliminating the Soledad Canyon pump station. That pump station is in a really, really small and unsafe location. So that's going to go away. The other two, we have the flexibility of taking those completely offline if we wanted to, or we can keep one as a redundant system if we had to in case of an emergency. And so those decisions will be made and will be discussed. But we do have the ability to take all three pump stations offline with the construction of these two new pump stations. And I want to clarify that there's a pump station here at Sand Canyon Plaza, and then there will be a future pump station that will come before you shortly at Skyline Ranch that is underway as well. So once we get those two, we'll basically localize all our pumps into those two facilities. And that just gives us the ability to be able to take off these older pump stations offline if we wanted to.
So if I could add, thanks, Orlando. As President Martin mentioned, the master plan will help us determine that. So I'm probably getting a little ahead of myself, but next month we're going to be doing a desktop condition facility assessment as part of the master plan. And then starting in December, we already have 4 weeks scheduled for remote at each location condition facility assessment. And so at that time, they'll see, Hazen and Sawyer, along with our team, will see the condition of those facilities as well as others. And then once the final master plan is done, whatever the recommendations are, should we keep, should we mothball, should we keep as backup, those decisions will be made then.
Okay, understood. And just follow up, if we do keep one as for redundancy, what sort of maintenance are we looking at, hypothetically? Check up once a year, or will they receive the same kind of maintenance as our currently operating pump stations?
You want to run them. You don't want to let pumps and motors sit. So we'd have to figure out an operating situation to where I'm not entirely familiar with how this zone works and where the water is pumped from each pump station. But again, that'll probably be part of the hydraulic model that's going to accompany the master plan.
Okay. Thank you. And then just a last question regarding the bidders that declined to bid. Any reason why?
Everyone's busy. Everyone's busy. A lot of the contractors are also, at least the seven that they went out to were in Orange County. They felt that they were... that Santa Clarita was a bit too far for them is what I saw in some of the email correspondence that we received. And some just straight up declined just because they're just so busy right now. They just don't have the capacity to take on more work.
Understood. Thank you. Back to you, Chair.
Thank you. Director Peterson.
Well, you bring up one question in my mind. I have another question too, but is the pump station will be equipped with a generator or connections for a generator?
Yes, sir. It will be. There's going to be a connection outside of the building where they can connect a generator during emergency situations.
Right. Well, that talks about the emergencies, how to deal with the power outages. As far as I'm just curious about the performance bond, why it was taken out of the bid.
Sure. Yeah, good question. The reason is because the developer, per our agreement, the developer is obligated to pay for that bond themselves. So initially, when they requested bond proposals or bids, they were not included. And then they went back and they asked for revised bids with a bond premium. Those are the numbers that I got. And I put that into our committee report and our presentation. And since the package was issued to everyone, the developer clarified that they put that number in there. So I wanted to make sure that on record that we went on record and cleaned that up. So that bond should not be paid by us, the agency. That should be fully covered by the developer themselves.
Director Plummer.
Yeah, and you have a system for ensuring that they do pay the bond, right?
That yes, we will get the bond certificates before we even start work. Those bond certificates will be delivered to our office.
Good catch, Mr. Marine.
And just to add one more thing, Director Peterson, not only do we have generator connections, we also are putting connection points on the suction and discharge side so we can bring in portable booster pumps as opposed to a generator, depends on a location and things like that. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
President Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you, Orlando. Listen, I remember what I was going to ask. It had to do with the construction inspection costs that our forces are going to be doing that work, right?
And, yes, sir.
And we've done this before with other developers and had that reimbursable?
We have done, as far as the inspection is concerned, yes, we've done an in-house inspection. I believe that Brent, I think it was last month, if I'm not mistaken, had requested a similar arrangement where, in essence, we took 10% of the total construction cost. Our inspectors will be charging to that budget for inspection purposes.
That was for the Nimbus Dean. That was for the Nimbus Dean tank that we got your authorization for last month. And
so we're not actually looking at the labor rates and benefits of the total cost. We're looking at percentage of construction cost.
That's correct. In calculating that fee, that's correct. However, we have gone out to third-party inspectors to get a proposal, and it's much less than what we budgeted for. And also, we've discussed this internally with staff, with our inspection staff, to make sure that we are able to cover that cost. And I think we have plenty of cushion there in that amount there on that budget.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Porter.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. Orlando, I just want to ask, obviously, in addition to the monetary costs, the non-monetary benefit the developer's putting forward, if you have like a complete list of those things, obviously there is the land that they are contributing. Are there other things that they're doing that aren't showing up in the 26% share of the monetary costs?
Yeah, they're grading the site. They're providing survey. They're building all the retaining walls around the site. They're bringing electrical service to the frontage of the property. Obviously, they're giving us the property in fee. And then they're taking care of all the erosion control and making sure that we're meeting all the state erosion control requirements or BMPs. That's all on their cost.
And I guess they're also, in a roundabout way, providing access to the site too. They're building the road that will service it as well. And so that's street improvements.
That's correct. Yes, this pump station is just off of their a new road that they'll be grading and building. Yes, sir.
And I might just add one more comment there about the time. We have had this deficit on the books since 2013, but there hasn't been much development in this area. So when the Sand Canyon Plaza developers stepped forward, we saw an opportunity to, you know, get a piece of land that's right in the heart of the Dean Zone. That's a good location. That's got good piping, whereas the existing Honey House has piping bottlenecks that kind of limits them. So it was a great opportunity for us to, you know, take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I see a lot of benefit, just beyond the 74% that we're monetary costs here. So yes, I would support the project, but I think it's between being both so good and the cost. I don't know about consent, but yes, I would support the project.
Any other questions? Seeing none, the idea of putting it on consent.
I think it's too much money. I think It should go to the whole board.
Yeah, I think a short presentation to the board would be good on this one. One thing that was identified recently that we're going to have to talk about, we'll get with Courtney, is some kind of a report, maybe on a monthly basis, rather than just saying, you know, it's in the engineering package and you can read it, is on items that may be coming up in the future, so that the board is a little more aware of projects and why we're doing. They're starting to revolt on the money from the finance bunch. You know how they are.
They're a terrible group.
Yeah, the bean counters are just mad.
And Chairman Cooper, you'd like that for the board packets or for the E&O committee?
Let's make this for the board package.
Okay. I will work with court and any problem.
And I'll get with Courtney and we'll see what we can come up with on a kind of a monthly basis. Looking at our capital improvement projects that are coming up in the future. So it doesn't give sticker shock to the rest of it. Okay. Orlando, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Item 5, monthly operations production report.
The report's in your packet. There really isn't a whole lot to report on in terms of production and groundwater levels. We did get a little bit of rain in September, and then we're getting a little bit of rain in October. So, you know, hopefully things are looking bright. Hopefully we don't get the, atmospheric rivers. It would be nice if we get what we got just the other day, where it's a nice soaking and such. But, you know,
we'll take a river today.
Yeah, we'll take everything. That's true. We'll take what they give us, Mother Nature gives us. And then the only other thing on the operations side is we've shut down Earl Schmidt for the winter for the general maintenance and things, because as demands reduce, we shut off one plant, lean on another, and then switch. Unless you have any other questions on monthly operations.
And then you can start the sludge project.
Exactly.
I want to know how you turn off the air conditioning in this room. Why is the air conditioning on? Yeah, seriously. Shut it off.
You want me to?
Any questions from outside those on the monthly operations report?
Seeing none.
Any just, questions?
Just one quick one. We have two members of the resource committee, and we have our experts.
So cool.
Just to verify, you know, all of our wells are still operating in the acceptable range from what I see.
Yes.
Do you want all the graphs that we have?
So yes.
That was what I saw, to make sure I didn't miss something.
Nope. Yep.
Okay.
It's doing its normal dip during this time, and then it'll do its normal rise.
Normal dips.
Yeah.
Seasonal.
I just have one.
Oh, Director Peterson, sure.
Are we serving, is the recycled water system still up and running?
Yes.
Yes.
I didn't see any.
Yeah, I think it's on, where is it?
September.
I'm trying to take the Chris Perez approach and just using this and no writing. I think it's the first page at the very bottom. It says Valencia recycled water is 808 from year to year, from September 21 to September 22. So.
What's up in the
Yeah, 808. Yeah, which is more than double its normal.
Yeah, it's usually 490 somewhere.
Yep,
there,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I know the golf course did some reseeding.
That's the big Valencia.
Yes. No. The what is it? TPC. Yeah. No, they did some too.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think it was the end of last year. So, but I think it's included in that number.
Just out of curiosity, of course, both of them are owned by the same people now.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yes. And the lakes that are on Big Valencia,
yes.
Of course, how do they replenish those lakes?
So they have
reclaimed.
No, they own part of well 160, one of our wells.
So if we could get reclaimed to them, that would be a good opportunity.
It would be
for those lakes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good.
Okay. Item 6, capital improvement projects, construction status, in the package.
So thank you. Normally, Courtney would handle that, but he's out.
and participating in a wedding. So the packet to kind of follow up is in your report, the report's in your packet, excuse me. There are 14 projects. Quite a number of them actually are nearing completion, you know, 90% or greater. So we look forward to closing them out very soon. The Valley Center well, I believe, is scheduled for a ribbon cutting on November 9th. So
yes.
And then as far as future fair share projects that you mentioned it a while ago, Director Cooper, that we are intending on these capital projects that are shared with developers where there's a CIP portion to actually include these in this report so you can see how our share of that project was going.
Very good. You know, and it might be something just to let the board know when we present this to the board for the pump station that we have another one coming. Just to give them a heads up that we're going to, this is team two, the other side, that we're going to be looking at a new pump station in there as well. Okay, any questions on from the outside, Liz?
Seeing none.
Committee, anything? Third-party funded agreements?
Okay, this report's also in your packet. It's getting quite long. There's, I think, about 160 projects on here, and deposit fees represent something on the order of $14 million. So, you know, keeps it busy. There are a number of the projects. We are in the process of working with finance and sort of a simplified NOC procedure to be able to close out a lot of the smaller projects because a lot of them are under 100K. There's some in the 100 to the 500K. So, but we're busy.
Very good. Any questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Me? Director Martin?
Just an observation that there's a lot of work going on in the engineering department.
It is very busy.
Our hat is off to
you. Thank you. Very nice.
Committee camp planning calendar.
This is item 8, and it's 3 pages. There's we've been trying to work to, you know, keep the number of items on each agenda, you know, manageable. I think there's 4 coming up in December. 2 of them are pump stations. One of them is going to be the Dean pump station for Skyline. Another's another deficiency we have in the Coachella zone. So that we'll be bringing forth for that. The one for the Dean pump station would be for construction. One for the Coachella will be a planning things. And then there's a couple of well projects. And then I think there's 5 items in January and beyond. So are there any questions?
Any outside questions?
Seeing none.
Committee? Yes, there's a lot coming up. Which this committee likes.
Let's get a detail.
It's the alternative.
Report on treatment distribution operations activities.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Cooper. Just a few things. The AMI grant is rolling along a little slower than we anticipated, but of the approximate 5,000 meters, we have 2,800 that have been replaced. The contractors have been really good. Minimal customer complaints with their work. They're polite. They have the logo on the side of their vehicle that says authorized SCD water contractor. We've only had, I think, 6 customers opt out for an AMI meter, which is not too bad out of 2,800. We allow that opt-out clause. We will charge them. There's an application fee, and then there's a monthly trip fee that we charge to send someone out to go read it and then come back. Because unfortunately, you can't read it AMR if it's an AMI. So
yeah,
it's easy to read it. Exactly, yeah. But that's not bad, only 6. To date, we have approximately 33,000 meters being read AMI, which is about almost half of our system right now.
which is incredible. And of those 33,000, only 83 are not transmitting currently. The reason for the not transmittal, some haven't been converted yet that have just been installed, right? We have to get them into the billing system and all that sort of stuff. There are about 25 in Mission Village that a future tank is going to have the AMI antenna, but the tank's not built yet. And when the propagation study was done, the area wasn't graded and there wasn't buildings around. So it's just not seeing line of sight. So we've been working with LA County and we finally got their approval. We're going to be installing some repeaters on some of their street lights, which will be temporary. It'll only be there for a few, well, depends on how long it takes to get the tank. Once the tank's built, we'll remove the repeaters and put the AMI antenna. So pretty good. I mean, 0.02% are not being read out of 33,000. Not bad. As Brent mentioned, we have Valley Center that's permitted and in operation. So that's great. We received an email from DDW that new PFAS sampling orders will be issued this week. So we got tomorrow. So hopefully we get it tomorrow. In it, it did say that they're accepting the OEHA's recommendation for PFHXS having a notification level of 3 and having a response level of 20. Those new orders don't kick in until next quarter, so January, and you have a full quarter to sample based on the new orders. So there will be more notifications that will probably have to go out that will come through the board like we've done in the past.
And we can test for that?
We can. Well, sort of. Thank you for reminding me. I had it written here, so I would have seen it. The method has also changed, the analytical method. So current analytical method that we're accredited for to test is method 537, but that only includes 18 of the, 5,000 PFAS chemicals, whatever. New method 533 looks at 28. We're not accredited for that. Jeff Colwin and his staff are currently working on that. They just received all the materials. They're going to start setting up the machine, start doing some of their initial testing. And then we're going to go through the same process we did when we got accredited for 537, which means we hire a consultant to do an audit. And then there's a report. And then you submit it to ELAP, Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program. And then they issue the accreditation. So we think probably by mid-year, we'll be able to start running 533. Our current treatment facilities, the NWELS and Valley Center, will still be able to use 537. So Jeff's staff will still run those samples. But once the new orders come out for next quarter and the second quarter, we're going to have to send them out to a different lab because we don't have the accreditation. Gil Hermosilla, which you've seen him present, he interviewed and accepted a position as water system supervisor at our treatment plants working for Rafael. So that was exciting. Not for me, because now I have to find a replacement, but we did. His name is James Sines. He currently works for Glendale Water and Power as their water system supervisor. I don't think it's the exact same title, but it's the same work. And he starts Monday. So he'll be working alongside Ryan By on our distribution side. So we're excited to get James. And that's it, unless anybody has any questions.
There's any questions from outside?
Seeing them.
Very good. Committee? Director Orzowski?
Does the new method require new equipment?
No. So that was one of the, it's a great question. That was one of the things we saw coming. So when we got estimates, for both just 537 and that can do 537, 533. The reason why we selected this one is because it does both.
Excellent. Yeah. We just need accreditation.
That's it. And it's minimal cost. I mean, I think the consultant that does the audit was a couple grand, and then ELAP is like $500 application fee or something like that. So.
And how long do we have to outsource sampling?
Probably 2 quarters worth. So it's not going to be a huge amount, but I think the cost for 533 is $500 a sample versus $300 for 537. So it'll be, maybe $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 worth of samples, I'm thinking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, Mike?
There was one other thing I wanted to touch, and I wish I would have said it when Rebecca was here. The safety culture in this agency is great. And Director Orzechowski, you touched on it. For staff to report an incident where they parked too close to something and got a scratch, for them to feel comfortable to report that, it's huge.
Yeah.
And so I just want to, you know, compliment them, but also in front of you all, that they have really developed a comfort level with the operations staff to where they feel comfortable in reporting it, which is important. Minor, large, whatever, which I think is great. So I just wanted to point that out.
No, that's good. That's important.
Yeah, it is.
To achieve that kind of a culture,
it's not easy.
No, not at all.
It was kind of, I don't want to say disheartening, but concerning to hear that three of those accidents were as the vehicles were parked and somebody rear-ended them.
Hit us, yeah.
Because that's, we're in the streets a lot.
Right. And
yeah, that's it.
People have their phones in their faces, even when they're driving, unfortunately.
Okay. Item 10, general report on engineering services section activities.
Sorry, just one more thing. Liz, if you can follow up with Mr. Alvord in April and include all the new members on the new org chart and have that sent out to all the directors.
Yeah.
You got some new additions almost every month.
Yeah.
So maybe we should wait until December.
You do another one?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, back to you, Chair.
Okay. Brent, or who's doing this?
Yeah, yeah, I'll be perfect this one this time. So, excuse me. So, actually, on the resource front, good segue. We actually do have a new engineer that's going to start, expected to start on Monday in Jason's group. So that's a welcome addition. And then also we finished the recruitment. We're moving into the interview stage for an engineering tech 2 position in my group. So hopefully by the end of November, we'll have a selection made and be able to extend an offer. So assuming everything goes well. You know, so.
Excellent.
So we need the help. We welcome that. So. The inspection part, I just wanted to mention a couple of things that Josh gave me, Josh Gilliam. One, Damien had presented a new meter SOP, I think a time or two ago. And so we're in the beta testing on that. Looking forward to implementing that. So far, things looking good as far as streamlining. And then also they're working, and Mike, you probably aware of this, some cross training with the water quality group on the cross connection program.
Yes.
We're looking at ways to engineering and operations integrating together is always a good thing. So we're looking forward to that. So with that, I'd like to, I'm just going to take this opportunity to just give a, sort of a high level brief overview of development within SCB water service areas, since that's a lot of what my group works on. So, and before we go into the slide, we do have a lot of active development projects underway, and we'll give you an overview and a map in just a sec. But before I go to the map, just some opening remarks for context. So you do hear a lot about in the news about real estate and interest rates. And of course, generally, as interest rates go up, home sales go down. We're seeing a little bit of that. But here in Santa Clarita Valley, you know, location is a big factor, and the Santa Clarita Valley is remains a hot market because of our proximity to the LA market and the amount of open space that we have that's suitable for development. So, of course, the city and the county are the land use agencies, but they do look to SCB Water to address the water supply through the SB 610 water supply assessment and the SB 221 water service or water supply verification process. So that is kind of our checks and balances on this. And we do base that on our urban water management plan, which was obviously just recently updated, as you know, in 2020. So based on that plan, that 2020 plan, we're about 67% built out, so we've got about 33% more to go. So with that intro, let's look at the map. So this map shows the larger developments in our service area that are currently active. And by active, I mean they're either in the planning design or construction phases. So blue is planning. The rose or pink color, depending on your color preference, is design. And then green is like a green light for construction. So the freeways in our valley, I like to think of it as it's kind of a wishbone formation with the 5 freeway on the west side and the State Route 14 on the east side. There's just in summary, there's 4 projects that are in construction. So you have the Mission Village on the west side. You've got the Skyline Ranch on the east side. You have the Vista Canyon also on the east side, but down just below the skyline. And then sort of in the middle of the page on the lower part of that wishbone is the Needham Ranch. So those 4 are in active construction. So you've got Mission Village and Skyline that are predominantly residential. Vista Canyon is actually a mix of residential and commercial, and of course a Metrolink station that's being relocated or built there. And there'll be a bridge across the river at that point too, that's to come. And then Needham Ranch is primarily industrial, and Drake Pack's one of the major tenants there. We've got 6 projects in design. And so Tesoro up at the top of the page is one. The Sand Canyon Plaza, which is on the east side that Orlando covered, is in design. Spring Canyon, just a little further to the east, is in design. Metro Walk, which is just below the Vista Canyon, that's in design, or it's just finished planning, and it's starting in the design. We have a little one in the middle of the page called Bouquet Canyon. It looks kind of like the head of a golf club that's in design. And then Aidlin Hills over on the lower left side, sort of near the Stevenson Ranch area, is in design. So and I've identified these as design, but in reality, some of these larger projects, there's some overlap between design and construction because they're large enough and they build them out in phases that, you know, there'll be part of it will be in design while the other part's in construction. And of course, Mission Village is a good example of that, as well as the Skyline and Tesoro projects, which are both in design and construction. So one highlight on the planning side is the crossroads. It's up and coming, and that's right there, sort of in the center of the page. It's across from the new sheriff station that was built, and it's a project that the city is interested in as well, and is currently in the entitlement phase because it's going to be extending the Via Princesa roadway from the Rainbow Glen area across, and it'll culminate there in Golden Valley Road. So it'll be a nice corridor that'll offer some traffic relief. So it's a good example because, so in our economy, we have seen some slowdown. So like in Skyline Ranch, for example, we have about 6 months ago, the developer had a business plan that they shared with us that, and we were working together on the water side. And it was about 200 homes in 2023. So in the next year, last month, they shared an updated business plan with us, which was about half that. So about 100 homes in 2023. So we are seeing some slowdown, but the reason and that brings me back to Crossroads. So Crossroads is a mix. Originally it had a lot of residential in it and some commercial. But what we were finding in these times when we get a little bit of a slowdown in the construction phase is we're getting an uptick in the planning and design phase. So the Crossroads, they've actually, this will be the, we're currently in the planning phase with them, but we've been in the planning phase with them for like 2 to 3 years. And this will be the 3rd iteration where they said, oh, we're going to, because of the economy, we're going to kind of change our mix from residential to commercial. And so I think what we're hearing from developers is that in the downtime, they're trying to get ready and poised for the rebound. So particularly in our area, because they still see it as a good place to build. So, anyway, that's kind of what I wanted to share there as far as that. Next slide, I'm just going to give you a couple of visuals on a couple of developments, both what they look like on paper and then it's sort of the 10,000-foot level. So this is Mission Village, a phase of it, actually, 2247 single-family homes and condos. There's actually 33 planning areas and 6 builders involved in that development. So it keeps us quite busy, us and the inspections department. This aerial is from earlier this year off Google Earth. It's about 10,000-foot level. And based on this, it's probably about 30 to 40% built out. So, and we are seeing a little bit of slowdown in this because one of those 6 developers has actually put some of their planning areas on hold temporarily. So, the next slide. So this is Skyline Ranch. And I might add on the roadway part, this is the track map that shows 17 planning areas, 1,220 units, but that road, that S curve is the Skyline Ranch Road that goes from on the left side or the west side is the Whites Canyon Road and Plum Canyon Road coming up from Soledad, and then it goes all the way through to Sierra Highway. So that was a major incentive for the city and the county, again, for traffic and another route to Sierra Highway and kind of offload Soledad a bit. So that was part of what the city and the county were looking at. The Dean pump station that Orlando was referring to and that you were saying, give a heads up, is right down in this area. And we'll be bringing that one to you in the next committee meeting for instruction. So the picture on the right just gives you, and this was taken from an airplane by one of our consultants that was flying over about a year ago. It was a great picture. I was glad he sent it to me. This shows, you can kind of see the S with the Skyline Ranch Road. These two right up in here are the two Skyline Ranch Zone welded steel tanks that are now in operation, and they're serving some of this area that's currently in construction. And so this one's probably about 40% built out. So that's, and they'll be ultimately 3 tanks and 3 pump stations. 2 are built of the tanks, as I just showed you. The other one is the Nimbus tank site, which is kind of up in this area here. I'm not tall enough, sorry. And then the next slide is kind of the closing slide. This is just to kind of recap a summary. So there's 20 major residential developments. It represents about 12,000. If you just count the number of units, it's about 12,000 new dwelling units. There's 4 commercial industrial developments that are currently active. And then as far as new infrastructure that we're anticipating, it's 15 new tanks and 12 new operations. So, and again, we look forward to the opportunity of getting in early in the planning phase so that we can be strategic about where they're placed, their size, and how they're integrated into our system so that they give us the most benefit from an operational efficiency standpoint. As far as revenue, I did just some quick math based on the 12,000 units, assuming they were all 1-inch meters, based on 2020 facility capacity rates, and it was about $200 million. As it builds out over time, which we're kind of estimating 10 to 20 years here, based on some feedback from developers, those prices, that revenue should go up just with new capacity fees and escalation, but also as we implement a retail capacity fee in the former Valencia service area. So that will also be a big adder there to come. So that's
That's it at a high level.
That's very good. I really appreciate seeing that. It's it shows us, one, how much work you've got going in engineering, keeping up with looking at what the needs are going to be in those developments. That's huge. So the developments that you showed in there, that's the 10 to 20 years to build those developments out. Is that right? Questions? Director Planbeck, I knew you'd have a question.
I thought that was a really great report. I was really interested.
And wait, let's see if we can get the outside comment.
Seeing none.
Oh.
Okay.
Please.
Okay. So I was interested in what design means. What does that mean when you say they're in design?
So we start out, our process starts from planning to, it's a phase from planning to design to construction. So the planning phase identifies, from our perspective, what the infrastructure is needed for a tank, the pump station, pipelines, and it gives us a basis for design, gives us the sizes, the location, that sort of thing. So then in design, it's design of those facilities. So it'll be pipeline design, it'll be tank design, it'll be pump station design. So when I first joined, we did some of the design in-house, or we managed the consultants directly, but just because of the sheer volume of work that we've got in development activity, we've started to allow the developer to hire those designers, but then we do the plan check. And so to make sure that, and we're pretty rigorous on the plan check, 30, 60, 90%, you know, here's our standards, and we're not afraid to, you know, red mark the plans as they come through to get what we want. So there's a quality control step, but that's, when I say design, that's because some of these are larger and they've got the different planning areas, and in some cases like Mission Village, you've got several developers. We'll have a master agreement with each one that kind of spells out those requirements and those protocols, and then you know, one planning area might be design, another one might have finished design, and they're ready to go to construction. So that's the sort of the overlap.
So when you say planning, do you work with them when they're still in the EIR stage, so that tank locations and stuff get into the EIR properly?
We like to whenever we can, as long as we've gotten the you know, and we try to stay in touch with the city and the county so we know when they're starting entitlement processes, because yeah, usually the CEQA is done by the developer, and we have the tank, like in Skyline, that was a good example, of, you know, the tanks and the pump stations were actually identified, you know.
I think this was mentioned at the board meeting too, that we can do more commenting in the EIR stage and try to encourage them to make sure there's groundwater recharge and then make sure the tanks are going places that are acceptable for the engineering department and stuff like that. And it seems like if you're not involved with the CEQA process, I don't know how that's happening. So that's what I was asking.
We like to do those in parallel. So while they're in entitlement, which is usually a couple year period, maybe a year to do the draft DIR, and then then another year to get to the final. But if we can identify it early in that first year, when we're doing like a water supply assessment, for example, then we encourage the developers are funding that. We give them a deposit. We manage and we hire the consultant ourselves, so that because that's the part that I enjoy, because it's kind of the strategic look, right? Mm-hmm. And so we like to be in kind of control of that fairly closely.
Developers paying for the water supply assessment, and we're paying for it.
Yes, we've been asking for deposits for water supply assessment.
Well, more than deposits, though, you've been getting. Those are pretty hefty reports.
Yeah.
I hope we're not doing it pro rata.
No, when I say deposit, that's the cost. Like, we'll get a proposal from a consultant to do the water supply assessment or to do the planning stage or phase study, and then. Mm-hmm. And then we actually put a little bit on top of that.
Yeah, I'm real interested in developers paying their fair share of this stuff.
I agree. Actually, I appreciate that.
Okay, so The other question I had is, you said, maybe it went by too fast, but you said 2,700 units was billed out for Mission College?
Just that particular phase. There's actually, just that particular.
Because I was going to say, as far as I knew, it was 4,000 units. So
yeah, no, it's not. You're right.
And how far along was it? Because the last time I heard, it was not that much. Yeah,
I think just based on the pictures and what I've kind of heard from the boots on the ground inspection group, I think it's about a third.
Like 1,000. So yeah, because that's what I heard too. So okay, now I'm sort of now I understood, because I thought you were saying a third or 4,000. So.
Yeah, no.
And then I've been I mentioned this to Courtney and maybe I asked last month that you weren't here, that I was real concerned about the bonding because new 5 point is down, their stock is way down, and the last time those guys declared bankruptcy, it was their stock was like really bottomed out like it is now. So I'm Courtney said you're watching all of that.
We are, and the bonding that Orlando picked up on and mentioned on the San Canyon Plaza, we actually, even though there's a fair share, we actually require that developer to bond for the entire.
Okay, well, that's good, because I mean then you end up with stranded assets and you have a bunch of tanks that you can't really use to serve anything. It's a big problem.
Director Rozahofsky.
I'm curious, when we do our supply assessment, it's for the 100% build out, right? And then if developers hit a snag or for whatever reason they develop less than that, do we change anything in our water supply verification, or it's still under the assumption of a complete 100% build out? Is there any change in our numbers?
Right. There can be, but it's always on the side of building out less than what was approved in the water supply assessment, which was based on CEQA. So usually CEQA is meant for the largest project that you anticipate or, you know,
right.
So that then when you actually go to develop.
So that we don't short ourselves if they pick up again. Okay.
So water supply assessment is part of the EIR process. And if you were to have more units, you would have a greater impact. You'd have to go back and redo things.
Yeah.
Lesser impact, you're okay. Water supply verification is actually a precondition of map recordation. So at the end, we're ready to record final maps. You submit to the county recorder that a water supply verification has been performed. And so the water supply verification may actually have a different unit count than is in the water supply assessment. But it's nominally less than at that point.
Okay. Understood. And for the White's Canyon Apartments and Plum Canyon Condos, what kind of parking is involved in that, in those developments? Are they underground or is there a garage above ground parking?
It's being built out.
Just curious.
No, I'm not sure. I have to look at that. We're master metering that, so we don't have to go on site. Because Josh might know. Josh, are you on the line? He was.
Yep.
Yeah, there he is. He's got his hand up too. Thank you.
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, currently it's all garages underneath all the structures out there. There's no underground parking. It's just standard car garages at the bottoms of the buildings.
Okay. Understood.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you. Back to you, Chair.
Thank you. President Martin.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. Brent, since you used the word standards in your long presentation, has our newly minted book of SCD water standard plans been completed and is final?
It's done. Courtney signed them on July 20th, I believe it was. So they're published and we're in use.
It's published.
Yeah. I'm not sure. So I think it's on the website.
So every developer knows what the requirements are way ahead of time.
Maybe next meeting you can bring a copy in so the committee can take a look at
it. I would agree with that.
It's an impressive document.
Okay.
And a lot of work's gone into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of what Josh is reviewing that quarterly, you know, just for, in anticipation of the next update, which we'd like to do annually. But yeah, no, it's a good, it's a construction manual.
It's probably relatively big, but if you guys can bring it in and maybe do some highlights on the PowerPoint, that would be great. Right?
Okay. Any other questions? Just a quick one. Where do we stand on Vista Canyon reclaimed water tank?
We're close. And Orlando's still on the, oh, he's a project manager on that, but the pipeline's in place now because we were waiting on the owl and then the bridge crossing. So that's, that contractor is done. We're just in the, we're in the closeout period now. The tank, I believe, is, we're hoping to have that done in the next month. But Orlando, do you want to speak to that? You can speak to Frederick.
By done, you mean?
Substantially complete, where we can fill it with recycled water.
By next month. Okay. That's good. Yeah, Orlando, please.
Go ahead,
Orlando. Yeah, we see the light at the end of the tunnel. The tank is actually, we can fill that tank now if we wanted to. We have some access road repairs that they're doing this week, and hopefully will be done by Monday or Tuesday of next week, depending if we get some rain or not. And then we connect all the SCADA sometime next week, and then we're just waiting on Edison to power us up. So we're very, very close on that one, finally. And we're excited to get that one back, get that one online.
And if we put water in it now, it's ready to go out into the distribution system?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, it's all interconnected.
Yeah, so there's one final, so the Title 22 report with the DDW and the regional board is still, it's complete. It's been in for a while under the agency or the DDW's review. They're waiting on the official agreement that's executed between the city and the agency in order to officially approve that report. But in order, there's three services within the Vista Canyon development itself, the City Transit Center, the Jefferson Village apartments there, which are now owned by a company called Gray Vista Canyon, and then the city park that's right in there. So those are, we're ready to serve those. We've got user agreements in place, ready to issue. But we've requested that the DDW authorize us to charge the pipeline and the tank so that we don't have to, in order to serve those initial services. And I might back up just a little bit. Vista Canyon Water Factory and the developer have their own Title 22 report to cover the Vista Canyon track. And so we would be able to serve those under that permit, under the reference in ours, but the DDW, we've asked for permission to charge the pipeline and the tank so that we can serve those three services in the Vista Canyon prior to having our full Title 22 report approved.
So really after next week, we could serve water out of that tank, but that part of it, you just couldn't do all of it.
We couldn't do the conversions of in the Fair Oaks community that we're
anticipating. Okay.
We're getting close. James Woodall was on site at the water factory today and installing the antenna that's going to talk to the tank. So we're really close.
Yeah, I think the water factory folks are really anxious to get that tank up and running.
Right. And they were off spec for quite a while, actually. They were having some issues
with their boats.
So, but I think they're close to getting that fixed now.
Good. Any other questions, concerns?
Good job, guys.
See you now. Hey, thank you very much. You guys do a much better job than was other
people. You're not listening, Keith, are you?
You're kind.
It was fun to record.
It's on the recording. We're adjourned. Thank you.